Hello. Welcome to the St. Philip the Apostle School Social Studies Podcast. I'm Mr. W., and I'm going to take a moment and explain what you're about to hear. Over the course of the next school year, 8th grade social studies students are going to record a series of podcasts based on what we discussed in their classes. Topics will range from projects and papers and topics and historical events to current social and political news. St. Philip the Apostle School made a commitment 4 years ago to become one of the most technologically integrated private schools in the nation. As a part of this goal, the Tech Committee and head librarian Miss Natalie took up the task of creating a fully modern learning commons, a part of which was an audiovisual room. One of the capabilities of this room and the tech that goes with it is sound recording. To that end, I conceived this project from my experience with participating in several other podcasts. I took the idea to the students and received over 30 volunteers to help with sound engineering, production, editing, and as on-air contributors. We hope that over the course of the year, students will learn skills through this podcast that can help them become more rounded students and also give them skills that will help them with careers after high school and college. Wish us luck. Hello and welcome to the St. Philip the Apostle School Social Studies Podcast. Today is October 28th, 2015. I'm Mr. W., and I'll be acting as a moderator during the episodes we are recording for this project. Over the course of the next year, you'll hear from a rotating group of four 8th grade students about current social and political news, as well as what they are learning in social studies classes. Today, we have four great examples of St. Philip the Apostle School students. Let's take a moment and introduce yourselves.
Hi, I'm Katrina.
I'm Claudia.
I'm Nick.
I'm Lorenzo.
The students have been discussing the 2016 elections in class. I also asked the panel of contributors today to familiarize themselves a little more by reading through several sources I provided them. We are going to focus on the Democratic candidates first, of which only three remain. Who'd like to take their first stab at their opinion of a candidate? Katrina, who do you want to talk about?
We'll go with Hillary Clinton. She's okay. Well known. So Hillary Clinton was a former Secretary of State, and she knows about foreign policy. She was a past first lady, but she was accused of corruption, and she is 69 years old. So, I mean, for me, I like Hillary Clinton. She's a very good candidate, and she has held office before, so that's a very good thing because she has experience in government.
Okay, Nick, what do you like or dislike about Hillary Clinton?
Well, first of all, she's been accused of corruption twice, once, and then her emails got stolen, which has to have something to do. I don't think she's a very good candidate based on the fact that she's just so easily accused and also easily stolen from.
Claudia, do you want to contribute?
I actually think she's one of the most qualified candidates because of the positions in office that she's held. She's been the Secretary of State, and I think she knows the most about foreign policy, and she'd be the most qualified to handle those issues.
Lorenzo, do you want to contribute to this?
Sure. I think Hillary Clinton would be a great candidate because she's already been in, like, the White House before. She's been the First Lady, and she, like the others have said, she's been the Secretary of State, so she'd be pretty good.
Okay. Would anybody like to introduce the next Democratic candidate? Why don't we go with Bernie Sanders? Claudia?
Okay, so he's a U.S. Senator from Vermont, and his main focus is on the middle class and how we're losing the middle class.
Okay. And do you want to give your opinion first on him?
No.
Okay. Who'd like to go first?
I think Ansos wants to.
Go ahead.
Honestly, I don't think he's a very good candidate just based on the fact that, he is, he's pro-choice for abortion. Yeah, he's pro-choice for abortion, so he's, first of all, going to lose a lot of votes from all those conservatives, and I just don't think he's a very good candidate based on those. He's not going to win. That's all I'm saying.
Okay, so you think he's unelectable?
No.
Okay. Exactly. What goes into unelectable for you guys? What do you think makes a candidate electable or not electable? Is it age? Is it gender? Is it party? Is it education? What makes a person electable or unelectable to you? Since we got on the topic, let's go ahead and discuss that for a minute.
Well, I mean, when someone's electable, it means they have good education, usually. They have experience. But when someone's unelectable, they have a lot of controversy around them a lot of the time. And they're just people that people seem to not think of highly.
Okay. Lorenzo, what makes a candidate electable or not electable for you?
I think what makes them electable and unelectable is like they're where they stand on certain propositions, like say abortion, like where they stand on that and things like that.
What else would be a key issue, do you guys think, for the electability or unelectability of a candidate?
If they were too conservative or too liberal, I think there needs to be a good mix between either one of them, or you're because there's only so many conservatives and so many liberals, and nobody's gonna like if somebody's too pro conservative or pro liberal, we're not gonna get anywhere.
Okay, so you think a candidate should be somewhere in the middle ground?
Definitely, yeah.
All right. Well, we discussed the top two Democratic candidates, and we want to be able to move on to talk about some of the Republican candidates, right? I mean, it's a colossal mountain of candidates on that side, so we'll go ahead and switch gears. Then we'll talk about the two front runners for the Republican Party first, and if we run out of time, then we'll continue it another time. But why don't we go ahead and start with the front runner currently in Iowa, which is Ben Carson.
Well, Dr. Ben Carson, he is 65 years old. He is a neurosurgeon, and most of the people that like him in the polls like him because of his honesty and his intelligence. And he is right now behind Trump nationally, but in Iowa, as you said, he is the front runner.
And who can explain to people listening who don't know, why is Iowa important? Why do we care so much about what Iowa thinks? Who remembers what order they come in the primary elections?
First, they come in first.
Okay, so they have they're the first state to hold a caucus, okay, and then the first state to hold the primary was New Hampshire. So why does that make it important for what Iowans care about, whether it's Ben Carson or Donald Trump? Why should the rest of the nation care?
Since they're the first ones, they really get to, they're basically what everything drives into, meaning that if whatever they choose, they're just cutting it down for the rest of America. And like, even though they're first, it's kind of like setting a trend on where everybody else should go.
Yeah. So it could set a trend for the rest of the elections, correct? So if you get Iowa and you get New Hampshire, that can be really important for you. So Ben Carson's leading in Iowa. What are some opinions of Ben Carson?
I personally don't think he's qualified to be president because he's never held office. That's one of the main things I think should be considered for presidency.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Held what type of office exactly?
Like elective office. He's a doctor. He doesn't have a super lot of political background.
So for you, electability would have to be something like experience, which you said
yes.
Earlier. So the experience of actually holding an office that you got elected to is important to you?
Yes.
Okay. The other front runner for the Republicans has the same electability problem, correct? Has Donald Trump been elected to an office prior?
No.
Okay.
No.
Why do some say that he might be a little more qualified than Ben Carson, despite the fact neither have been elected? So, Nick, you were about to say. Go ahead and say it.
Because he runs a company. I mean, he's got some experience on how things building a plan and rising up through the ranks. And so, basically, if you sort of think about it, running a country is somewhat like running a company.
Okay. So that's basics on Donald Trump. Do we want to give any more background information on Donald Trump? Does anybody have his age, his current occupation?
He was a former reality TV host.
Okay, he was a former reality TV host. That's true.
He's been documented for saying a few interesting things before. A lot of things that have stirred controversy.
Okay, he's a controversial candidate. Is that by design, or do you feel like he does it by accident?
I think it's by design.
Why?
I think he wants to attract attention to himself.
Why would you want to do that as a presidential candidate?
Well, if you attract attention to yourself, if you have the attention on you, then you have more people that'll see what you're doing, and you could end up getting their votes. You just never know.
By the way, to answer Mr. W's questions, he's 69 years old, and he attended the University of Pennsylvania.
Good. So, controversy. There's a phrase in public relations that there's no such thing as bad publicity. So, do we think that that does apply to a presidential campaign? Lorenzo, what do you think? Do you think that the idea that there's no such thing as bad publicity could apply to a presidential campaign, or does it just apply to things like companies?
I think that there can be bad publicity, because if you say something bad when you're trying to publicize yourself, then it won't like end up well for you.
Could you give us an example that you think of as bad publicity for a presidential candidate, maybe for Donald Trump or even Hillary Clinton, either one, it doesn't matter?
When Donald Trump was like saying racist things about...
What would you qualify as being a racist thing he might have said?
When he talks about like China and
immigrants,
yeah.
Okay, good. Those were definitely controversial remarks, right? They were in the news as being controversial. And so in that case, it could be bad publicity for him. Now, does this hurt him, do you think, in the primary election or if he gets elected to be the candidate and in the general election? Would something like that hurt him more later on or more right now?
I think definitely more later on because, I mean, in front, it's just basically trying to get past that first stage. Then people really like pull out the stops, and it's like if you're in a battle for the presidency, the other candidate is just going to be republishing all that stuff that you said, and it could severely damage your campaign.
Okay. There are many other candidates for the Republican Party. So who would like to give us maybe somebody that they think of as being a good option or somebody who hasn't been talked about a lot that you want to talk about? So who'd like to give us another candidate to talk about? Go ahead, Nick.
Carly Fiorina.
Sure.
So I think that she's a fairly good presidential candidate based on the fact that, I think she might be equal to Donald Trump based on the fact that She runs a major company. She's the CEO of HP, and she has almost some of the same qualifications. She attended the University of Maryland, and...
Did you like her performances in the debates?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
I heard it in class, but they said that Carly Fiorina had won the debates.
Okay. Yeah, the second debate, correct?
Yeah.
All right. Do the debates matter to the four of you? Just a quick yes or no. Go ahead, Katrina, you start.
Yes. They matter.
A little.
Not at all.
Yes.
Okay, so for those of you who said not at all, why not at all?
Because the debate is basically... It's what the American people want to hear. It's like they bring up certain topics, and sometimes the candidates just take it into really off topic. Excuse me. And I think it's more about what the American people want to hear and like getting that first initial step into becoming popular,
mm-hmm.
and it's not anything to do with what they're really wanting to do.
Good. Okay. Lorenzo, why do they matter for you? You said yes.
I think they matter because it's their chance to show like the voters, like what they're going to do as president.
Good. And there's also a lot of people who are tuned in, right? I think it was the first one broke Fox News' records, if I remember correctly, right? Okay, so a lot of people watch. It's a good way to get your name out. Now, we have a little bit of time. Let's discuss one more of the Republican candidates. Who would like to introduce one more?
How about Ron Paul?
What about Ron Paul?
Well, I mean, he was a U.S. senator and He was a U.S. senator of Kentucky, and he is doing pretty well in the polls right now, I believe. He attended Baylor and Duke Medical Center.
Yeah, what's his profession?
Medicine.
Yeah, he's a doctor, right?
Yeah.
He's he works in I think he's an optometrist. Or he works in ophthalmology, one of the two. Okay, so another guy who's smart, right, and is a doctor just like Ben Carson, but isn't doing quite as well. So there's a lot to look at in the field, but we're going to have to go ahead and wrap up for this session. We'll record again tomorrow, and tomorrow we'll discuss something more specific to what we're doing in social studies classes, and we'll come back to the topic of presidential candidates several times, I'm sure. So if you guys can go ahead and give your name again and then a goodbye. So we can wrap this up.
Hi, I'm Katrina, and hope you enjoyed the podcast.
Claudia, thank you.
Nick, thanks for tuning in.
Lorenzo, see you later.
Welcome back to the St. Philip the Apostle School Social Studies Podcast. Today is November 2nd, 2015. We planned to record the second segment the day after our first, but the school's Halloween games prevented us from doing so. This podcast is meant to be a learning experience, and one of the things we learned was about scheduling, and the other thing we learned was about the speaking into the microphones and using the correct levels and things like that. So you'll notice in the first segment, things were very low volume-wise, and this segment, hopefully, through a little bit of coaching, the segment contributors will be a little bit louder. Today, we're going to discuss the difficulty of getting people to agree on things. In social studies class, I gave the 8th grade a fake assignment, which they believed was real, that required them to work as a class to complete a specific task. Failing to succeed meant everyone in the class would fail as well. Obviously, not being a real assignment, the point of the assignment was something completely different. The point of the assignment was to show the students the difficulties faced by the 55 delegates who were sent to Philadelphia to draft our Constitution, and also to show them just how hard it is to get everybody to agree. So we'll go ahead and go down the line. Everybody can give what they thought of the assignment without too many specifics, so that we can still kind of keep it a secret. And then also what it taught you about how difficult it must have been for the 55 delegates to frame the Constitution. So we're going to go in reverse order that we did last time, so we're going to start with Lorenzo.
I felt that the assignment was very overwhelming because we had to make our own study guides and tests and quizzes for the second trimester.
I thought it was going to be interesting because the people that we'd elected were questionable.
I disagree. So it was very hard. We elected people to be in charge and to run our class. It was really overwhelming, especially in the really small time frame we had to get everyone to agree. And
I liked the assignment, but it was really hard to get everybody to agree on something because I know that I have a very strong opinion on things, and so I kind of had clashing opinions with many people.
Okay, looking back on the assignment and how it went and what you know now, knowing that what the purpose of it was, what would you have done differently to make things either go smoother or to get people to agree more or less, depending upon the topic, right? So what would you have changed about how you did the assignment itself, Claudia?
Well, first off, we needed to have a better election. Our election was not organized. Also, we needed to just stop thinking about, everybody was just having different ideas, and we just needed to consider everyone's and to put it together.
Katrina?
I mean, to make it different, I would probably have a more organized election, as Claudia said, and also we would have to have a more ordered class because our class kept like screaming ideas everywhere and it was kind of disorganized, and that didn't help with the task at hand.
So how much of a role do you think organization or better organization plays in getting groups to make decisions? Lorenzo, let's go with you.
I think it played a pretty big role because some of the class like went off and did their own thing, and if we were all organized, it would have went a lot smoother than it did.
Nicholas, what's your thoughts on organization?
I think that it's really helpful just in general to be organized when you're doing something with a group especially. I found it very frustrating because I knew exactly what my lesson plan would have been, but then I had to like integrate other people's ideas into the fact, and that was a little bit frustrating for me. But I mean, being organized, especially the election, would have been way better, because somebody took charge, and then set up an election, and then was like, you know, I'm just going to leave. Bye. Here are the elected people. Deal.
Right. You didn't end up counting all of the votes.
No.
Correct?
No.
Right. Your group decided that you would just accept the first two people who had the most votes, and that was that. So what have you learned about people in general? Like, Americans tend to be very individualistic. Right? We put a high premium on being an individual and thinking for yourself and being real to yourself. But does that work? Does that lend itself to a system where you have to work with other people?
No, I don't think it does. Because frankly, you're working to get your own thing done if you're being an individual. So if you're working to have your soul self in mind, then when you have to like maybe share ideas or share crops or something, it's not going to share secrets as to how you're being so successful. It's not going
to
work.
Makes it harder to compromise.
Yeah.
Katrina?
Well, I disagree because a lot of the things that happened with the Constitution, one of them was called the Great Compromise. And so if we had a compromise to make everybody happy, they found a way to make it work.
But you have to remember that we were working to make... we wanted to compromise. We weren't looking out for solely ourselves. That's what individualism means, is to look out only for yourself.
Yes, Claudia? But also with lots of different people's ideas, it can help you come to a better conclusion because you can see multiple sides of a conflict and it can help you make better decisions.
I feel like you're coming back to the same discussion about organization. Right? Like, how could your group have come to a single conclusion or a compromise, as some of you are talking about, without having organized yourselves better, without framing the discussion differently? Did you come up with an idea of how to have people propose anything? Did you have a system for questioning? Were people supposed to raise hands? Were there bells? Were there anybody who's going to notify somebody that it's their turn to talk? Or did everybody just kind of do whatever they wanted? Lorenzo?
We just shouted out ideas. We didn't have a system for giving out ideas. We just shouted them out.
Whoever screamed loudest won, basically.
Yeah. And is that a sense of working together or being an individual, do you think?
Individual, definitely. But at the same time, we tried to get them to raise their hands, but that didn't necessarily work because, you know, strong opinions.
And also a lack of opinions, right? Because some people just didn't care.
Others like branched off. Like there was a group in the left corner that just completely branched off and did its own little thing.
Mm-hmm.
And
they had a full plan in place.
Yeah.
To do everything. And nobody knew about it except for them and me.
Yeah.
Because I was watching.
Yeah, they didn't notify.
Right, they didn't say anything.
We wanted to know what their ideas were. We were totally open to ideas, but they chose not to share it. I think that's a form of individualism, definitely.
I thought it would have been a lot easier if we just, like, because you basically have a pretty good lesson plan already set out for us, so if we could have just copied your lesson plan just with a little bit of a differentiate, we would have been absolutely fine, I think.
Okay. Now, you guys just finished reading Animal Farm as a class, right?
Yes.
And we discussed
yeah.
it in class. So did you see a correlation between this assignment and Animal Farm?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. What is that? What is that? How did it correlate? How did it work together? What did you see there? Let's go in order this time. So let's start with Katrina.
Well, in Animal Farm, we have leaders like the pigs who are very intellectual, but at the same time, they were very power hungry, and they had a lot of individualism, and they had strong opinions, and that's always something in our government and even in our assignment in class.
Yeah, because the people who took charge were kind of like the pigs in a way, in that they wanted to take charge, and except that we were different because we did want to see other people's sides on it, and we wanted to make it good for everyone. It wasn't just about ourselves, because everyone in the class had to pass, or else everyone would fail.
And did the pigs start out, though, wanting to just take care of themselves, or did they ask for other opinions at the beginning or not?
They did. I guess we just weren't given enough time to...
devolve?
Yes.
Yes.
Nicholas?
Yeah, I kind of saw that because all three of us, like me, Claudia, and Katrina, were... Claudia and Katrina were the two elected officials, and basically because some of the people wanted it, I was also brought into the group of teachers, and I kind of saw that I didn't know about Animal Farm yet, but now that I look back at it, we were kind of starting to be the pigs. But even from day one, like the pigs, like from the very start, they really started to like start taking their taking their own stuff for themselves, like the milk and the apples.
Okay, good. Lorenzo, what are your thoughts on Animal Farm and the lesson that we did?
The lesson we did was a lot like Animal Farm, because the leaders and the teachers we elected were the pigs. They were willing to get opinions from the others. And I think if we were given more time, we would come to the conclusion we're the pigs only.
Right, and you also had the element of the cat, right? The cat is the character in the book that doesn't want to do anything but wants to reap all the benefits. You certainly had people there who were sitting there not contributing at all, but they wanted to be able to benefit from what was going on, correct?
Yeah.
And then you had people who were working on their own.
Yeah.
That kind of would be like the horses who had ideas but then didn't do anything. So, all right, guys, that's going to have to wrap it there. So you will all get a chance to contribute to the podcast again in other ways. Some of you will want to be sound engineers or editors, or some of you will come back and contribute. So we'll go ahead and sign off one at a time, and then we will wrap it up.
Bye. Hope you enjoyed.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
You stay classy, St. Phillips.